the headlines. NATO leaders convene in Madrid as Moscow and Beijing slam the military lines over raising alarm about Russia and China. China's President Xi is visiting Hong Kong as the city celebrates the 25th anniversary of its return to the mainland. And Israeli lawmakers vote to dissolve the Knesset, setting the stage for an early election in November. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. China and Russia react to comments made by NATO leaders at their summit in the Spanish capital, Madrid. Beijing has slammed NATO's warning as completely futile. In their recent gathering, NATO leaders said Beijing's ambitions, policies, and close ties to Russia pose a challenge to the interests and security of the military alliance. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin has said that Moscow has no problems with Finland and Sweden joining NATO, but that the Kremlin would be sure to respond if the Western military alliance deploys troops and infrastructure in those countries once they become members. According to Putin, the membership would deal an inevitable blow to Moscow's relations with Helsinki and Stockholm. Putin made those comments shortly after NATO officially invited Finland and Sweden to join the alliance during the summit.
Leaders of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization gathered for their annual summit in the Spanish capital, Madrid. As expected, this year's summit turned into an anti-Russia agenda in the wake of growing tensions between Moscow and the West over the Ukraine war that began in February.
President Putin's war against Ukraine has shattered peace in Europe and has created the biggest security crisis in Europe since the Second World War.
The Western military alliance also pledged to ramp up military support for Ukraine.
And today, leaders agreed to strengthen our support by agreeing a comprehensive assistance package for Ukraine. This includes equipment to counter mines and chemical and biological threats, and hundreds of portable anti-drone systems.
Western countries, including the United States, have provided Kiev with billions of dollars worth of weapons since the war began. Russia sees it as the main factor behind prolonging the conflict.
It seems to us that the kind of line that the West has taken is absolutely counterproductive and harmful. The more they pump weapons into Ukraine, the longer this conflict will last.
Irrespective of huge military support for Ukraine, NATO's ambitious plan for expanding its membership has also driven a wedge between the alliance and Russia. However, NATO leaders have welcomed Finland and Sweden into the alliance after Turkey struck a deal with the Nordic duo to drop its objections.
Today, NATO leaders took the historic decision to invite Finland and Sweden to become members of NATO. The agreement concluded last night by Turkey, Finland and Sweden paved the way for this decision.
Russia says the two countries' accession to NATO is destabilizing.
We consider the expansion of the North Atlantic Alliance to be a purely destabilizing factor in international affairs. It does not add security either to those who are expanding it, those joining it, or to other countries that perceive the alliance as a threat.
The rift between Russia and the West has raised concerns that the ongoing war in Ukraine could escalate into a nuclear conflict, the fallout of which could deal devastating blows to the world.
We're receiving reports of an explosion and heavy gunfire out of Afghanistan's capital, Kabul. The explosion is said to have happened near the venue of the Afghan Jirga, or the Assembly of Ulama. Our correspondent Abdullah Amirzadeh joins us now via satellite from the Afghan capital, Kabul, to bring us up to speed on the recent events. Abdullah, what details do you have to share with us?
Yes, as you know, today is the first day of this Jirga, or also known as the Grand Assembly of Tribal and Scholars, Religious Leaders. Today was the first day of a three-day jirga, or let's just call it the Grand Assembly, and many guests were coming from different provinces of Afghanistan. It is estimated that the number of guests reached to 3,500 people. As you know, several minutes ago, maybe like 90 minutes ago, one hour and a half ago, several explosions were heard and heavy gunfire. We do not know about the number of casualties, but Zabihullah Mujahid, the spokesman of the IEA, has announced that he would have a press conference today in the following hours. Yesterday, actually, there was preparation for this grand meeting. The roads were closed, and the number of security soldiers and the protocols were increased very much. But today this happened, these explosions and barrage of fire. We do not actually know many things about that yet because Taliban officials have not announced any details on this.
All right, thanks a lot. Abdullah Amirzadeh joining us from the Afghan capital, Kabul. It's the 25th anniversary of Hong Kong's return to mainland China, and President Xi Jinping is paying a visit to the territory on this occasion. This is Xi's first trip outside mainland China since the beginning of the pandemic. A delegation of high-ranking officials is also accompanying him. President Xi is expected to attend the swearing-in ceremony of the city's incoming leader, John Lee, tomorrow. The media have not reported much detail about the trip, but he's expected to have meetings with a group of pro-Beijing politicians. Strict COVID considerations are in place during the visit. Just minutes ago, Israeli lawmakers voted on the dissolution of the Knesset, a development that marks the end of Naftali Bennett's tenure as prime minister. The dispersal of the parliament will fuel continued political instability in Israel, pushing the regime towards its fifth election in just over 3 years. The lawmakers have also voted to hold the elections on November the 1st. Last week, Bennett moved to dissolve the Knesset after his ruling coalition collapsed following a series of defections. The prime minister says he will not run in the upcoming elections. His predecessor, Benjamin Netanyahu, has called Bennett's administration the worst in Israel's history. Netanyahu is planning a comeback by winning a sixth term in office, even though he's on trial for a number of corruption charges. Well, the Israeli regime has kept the Gaza Strip under siege for years now. The blockade has made life extremely hard for residents. The regime fully controls entry into and exit from the coastal sliver via land, air, and sea. Palestinian activist and journalist Wafa al-Udaini says that everything there is controlled by Israel.
In 1967, when the Israeli occupation, when they occupied the Gaza Strip, they imposed a blockade, and they control every single thing here in the Gaza Strip. They just destroy Gaza port. They just, close Gaza port. And during the Israeli airstrikes on Gaza, they also destroy the airplane here. The only airplane here in Gaza in 2005, I guess. So they indeed, they control every single thing here in Gaza. And when we talk about siege, it didn't start in 2007. It just started in 1967. And actually, this blockade got tightened in 2007 by the occupation when after the Palestinian and the legislative election here in Palestine, they just imposed or tightened the Israeli siege in Gaza.
When it comes to human rights, Iran has been on the receiving end of harsh, unfounded allegations of abuse made by Washington. One would ask how a violator of human rights could judge and accuse another country in the same subject, especially when that country, namely the United States, has been involved in economic terrorism to the point that it has cost Iranian lives.
Iran is marking American Human Rights Review and Exposure Week, which runs from June the 27th till July the 3rd, which aims to highlight U.S. human rights violations towards the Iranian people. In a statement for this occasion, Iran's foreign ministry has released a report highlighting the U.S. violations of the rights of the Iranian people. One of the most blatant U.S. atrocities against the Iranian people is the economic terrorism the U.S. regime is committing through different sanctions.
I think what's interesting is that it should even come up that other countries have the right to bring the same charges against the United States that the United States has been using to sanction and punish and invade and occupy, to be honest, countries for the last 75 years. I think it makes sense for others to raise the issue of U.S. human rights violations.
Iran says U.S. unilateralism and imposition of unilateral economic sanctions with the aim of forcing governments to change their policies is a gross and systematic violation of human rights. It further highlights the fact that the imposition of unilaterally coercive sanctions by the United States has become a tool for violating the natural and legal rights of the Iranian people, including the right to life, the right to health, the right to adequate living standards, the right to education, and access to knowledge and technology. The Foreign Ministry report also touched on some of the repercussions of the sanctions, saying they had endangered food security, led to the non-cooperation of companies supplying medical and health goods and equipment with Iran, and disrupted purchase of drugs for rare and acute diseases. Sanctions on the aviation industry and aircraft parts have also seriously endangered the safety of Iranian passenger planes, while the lack of access to the international financial system and refusal of foreign companies to accept foreign exchange guarantees issued by Iranian banks have put additional economic pressure on bread earning.
The loophole, or what the United States has seen as a loophole, was that because it involves economics, it's not actually war. And this is complete crap. You know, I mean, this is medieval war. Not only is it warfare, but it's medieval siege warfare by other means. It killed 500,000 children in Iraq. It's killing people in Iran.
Iranian women, and led to a decline in purchasing power of the elderly and problems for people with physical and mental disabilities in accessing medicines and medical equipment, adequate care and rehabilitation.
Iran says the United States is involved in economic terrorism since it has prevented the Islamic Republic from generating revenues, including by disrupting Iran's oil exports. But more importantly, the White House has made it impossible to import medicine and medical equipment, which has either jeopardized Iranian lives or resulted in the death of people. The main motive for Washington's behavior in this regard, which has been labeled a war crime, is for there to be a change of government in Iran.
The U.S. animosity towards the Iranian people dates back to the 1950s. In 1953, the U.S., along with the U.K., plotted a coup against then-Prime Minister Mossadegh and toppled his government.
And if we go to the Iranian case, well, it just adds further hypocrisy to the notion of what the United States is doing about human rights violations around the world.
The U.S. helped reinstate a brutal dictatorial monarchy that suppressed their aspirations for a free and independent country. Right after the Islamic Revolution, the U.S. used various means to topple the Islamic Republic. It sided with the regime of Iraq's former dictator Saddam Hussein in his war against Iran. The U.S. shot down an Iranian civilian airplane in 1988 and killed 290 people. The U.S. has supported various terrorist outfits to destabilize Iran. It has delisted the notorious MKO cult from its terror list. The group, which has committed various crimes against Iranian people, enjoys the support of US officials. In 2001, the US regime labeled Iran as part of the so-called Axis of Evil and sought to militarily confront Iran. The US campaign of terror and threats against Iran culminated in former President Trump's so-called maximum pressure campaign. But the policy was an utter failure. Now, after over four decades of animosity and plots against Iran and its people, the US needs to change its stance towards the Islamic Republic.
Elsewhere, Iran has marked the National Day of Fight Against Chemical and Biological Weapons. The occasion is to commemorate the victims of the Sadash chemical attacks launched by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in June 1987. Salman Kujuri has more.
The Iranian city of Sardasht in West Azerbaijan province is the third city after Japan's Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which became the target of weapons of mass destruction in the world. In June 1987, Iraqi warplanes dropped mustard gas bombs on Sardasht in two separate bombing runs on four residential areas. The gas attacks occurred during the Iraqi-imposed war on Iran, when Iraq frequently used chemical weapons against Iranian civilians and soldiers. According to official reports, out of 12,000 inhabitants of Sardasht, over 8,000 were chemically wounded, while 130 people died of the mustard gas attack. In April 2004, the Tehran Public Court found the government of the United States liable for the attacks through its support for the regime of Saddam Hussein. The U.S. government was ordered to pay $600 million in compensation to the victims. Saddam's regime used chemical weapons against Iranian forces and civilians more than 300 times during the eight-year war, leading to the injury of more than 100,000 people, including thousands of civilians. Over 400 Western companies equipped Saddam with chemical and biological weapons. According to available documents, most of these companies belong to Germany, Britain, and France.
Despite the passage of 35 years from the Sardasht chemical bombings, still the families of victims urged the international community to bring the main perpetrators of the crimes to justice. But their call seemed to have fallen on deaf ears so far. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Hidden Files. Have you heard about the billionaire space race? What about Harvey Weinstein's abuse case? Or the Trump supporters' takeover of the U.S. Capitol? Well, chances are that you have. When it comes to major stories from mainstream media, the world is certainly a small place where the news is heard loud and clear. But in the cacophony of these major stories, there are many voices that are hushed. Stories that seem as small as a single ordinary person and yet are as large as a community, a major city, or even a nation. Hello, and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzieh Hashemi, and today, in this new program, I'd like to take a pledge to provide you with a rare glimpse of news that seldom make the news, or stories that don't fit the mainstream plot, and of voices that are silent. But before we go further, let me tell you a personal story that doesn't only belong to me, one in which, had things gone differently, I would likely not be here with you today, and neither, perhaps, with the idea of this program, a story that started some 3 years ago with my arrest in the U.S.
It's just past 7:30 in the morning over here in the Iranian capital. You're going to have to begin this bulletin with a shocking development. Press TV's news anchor, Marzieh Hashemi, has been detained and imprisoned in the United States with no formal charges. Ms. Hashemi was arrested in a St. Louis airport and has now been transferred to a Washington, D.C. facility by the FBI. The reason for her arrest, as I just said, remains unclear up to this moment. She was visiting the United States to visit her ill brother, who was terminally ill, I've been hearing, and of course visiting her other relatives. Ms. Hashemi has informed her family members of her ill treatment in detention. Hashemi, a Muslim woman, was born in the United States and is an American citizen.
Such stories of being kidnapped and arrested without charge are so surreal that it's hard to believe that it can happen to you. Until, of course, it does. Growing up as a Black American, studying journalism as a student and later as a convert to Islam, I heard and read this happened to many others, of course, but I never thought that I myself could end up being kidnapped and arrested. And that's exactly the point. The numbers speak for themselves.
Mass incarceration in the United States definitely has a racial component to it. According to the United States Sentencing Commission, Black male offenders receive sentences on average 19.1% longer than similarly situated white male offenders. In addition, Black men are 6 times more likely to be incarcerated than white men. Following is the lifetime likelihood of imprisonment for U.S. residents born in 2001.
With me understanding well the history of policing and the judicial system in the United States, when I was arrested, I knew that anything could happen to me. I knew that there were political prisoners in the country who were still incarcerated after 40 years and had spent most of those years in solitary confinement. Though the United States denies having any political prisoners, I knew how people had been framed for so many offenses. Now, my case was quite unique in another aspect. That is, unlike the many Black men, Muslims, and activists, I had a decent following as a media personality here at Press TV. So the station kicked off an awesome information campaign about what was happening, and social media groups went into full gear getting the word out. I didn't know about all this from the inside of prison, of course, but I did see that my treatment was quickly improved, and then in a matter of days, I was released without charge. But I don't know of anyone else who has been this blessed. It's not uncommon for Black men, for Muslims, and for activists to spend years in prison, at times in solitary confinement, without there being a shred of honest evidence against them. Many end up pleading guilty as they are not told that they will not be released unless they plea bargain and spend some years in prison. So it's only fair for me to use this platform to speak about those whose cases haven't received this kind of public attention, like fellow Americans whose country claims to be the vanguard of protecting human rights around the world. when in actuality it often falls quite short of defending human rights, even according to its own constitution. Well, I'd like to bring in my special guest for this program. Welcome, Dr. Cynthia McKinney to Hidden Files.
Dr. Cynthia McKinney. As a member of the Democratic Party, Dr. McKinney served six terms in the U.S. House of Representatives starting from 1993. McKinney left the Democratic Party and ran in 2008 as the presidential candidate of the Green Party of the United States. She is a major critic of U.S. policy as it is related to Israel, and was part of a Gaza relief boat to help to get basic supplies to the Palestinian people of Gaza. The boat was attacked by the Israeli Navy. McKinney introduced legislation to have the government release information about the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. She has also introduced legislation demanding the release of government information regarding the murder of Tupac Shakur.
Thanks so much for being with us. It's a pleasure having you. Well, I'd like to start off in looking at the situation. I mean, it was amazing what happened to me and the way it went down, Cynthia. And it appears what we're seeing is the erosion of the Constitution. Your thoughts about this and how exactly is this happening? What's going on?
Well, I think what has happened in the United States is that over the years we've had a gradual shifting in even the kind of governance system that exists inside the United States. So there was a time when the Constitution was the primary law of the land and people spoke about constitutionalism. The Bill of Rights was something that rolled off the tongues of everyone, and if a law or a particular behavior was unconstitutional, it was challenged. But gradually what happened is that we saw the erosion of not just, of constitutionalism and of the Bill of Rights itself. And so a situation like what happened to you, which is unconscionable in a country that prides itself on freedom and due process and justice, but now no one's rights are guaranteed. And so you've got people who went to the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, and they are in solitary confinement. Many of them have been in solitary confinement for months now. And the situation has changed. I believe what has happened is that there has been a coup against the U.S. Constitution. And the average, ordinary U.S. citizen doesn't realize that the constitutional protections that have been guaranteed for centuries really are no longer protecting the people of the United States. And the average, ordinary U.S. citizen doesn't realize that the constitutional protections that have been guaranteed for centuries really are no longer protecting the people of the United States.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting what you said. I mean, your thoughts overall on the role of the mainstream media in misinforming people about that reality of constitutional law and the basic rights that Americans once had, but they no longer do.
We used to have media. Well, actually, there was a time when we had real media. And even though that media had its own sort of vested interest or special interest in and of itself, you could at least get half of the story from U.S. Media. It's Walter Cronkite, and that's the end of the story. Or you'd have the other fella on radio, and he'd say, and now the rest of the story. So there was always a way to dig a little bit deeper, and we had investigative journalists who were given the opportunity to hone their craft with the problems around governance. So you even had, say, for example, the Washington Post with Watergate. It was the Washington Post that broke the story.
Right.
Now the Washington Post covers up because it's been purchased indirectly, by the CIA by way of Jeff Bezos and a $600 million contract for various things that Bezos was able to get by way of Amazon. So you've got a situation now where we don't even have alternative, we don't have responsible corporate media. We don't have alternative media because now the foundations have stepped in and you've got George Soros who's pouring money into the Democratic Party, pouring money into alternative media. You've got already the other foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation and other foundations pouring money into alternative media. So what used to be that, or what used to provide that critical analysis of what actually is happening in our political system and who is benefiting and who is losing, you don't have those questions even asked any longer. And so therefore, we've also had a situation where the courts in the United States have said that it's okay for the media to knowingly lie to its consuming audience. So now you've got legalized lying, you've got an end of investigative journalists, you've got the concentration of ownership of the media, both alternative and sort of corporate. And so now, basically, I think it was Mark Twain who said, even back then, he said that, you know, the more education you have, if you get your information from the regular media, then you're misinformed. Well, yeah, you're misinformed, and vast numbers of people in the United States are misinformed because they get their media from what they think are trusted sources, but they're no longer trusted.
What's your perspective on the internet being controlled and how that can affect people who are actually searching for the truth?
The shame of it all is that the internet itself and the research and development that gave us quote unquote social media was paid for by U.S. taxpayers. These should be, as are the airwaves for that matter, should be public resources. But there's very little public in the public resources that have been privatized. Well, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said we need a revolution of values. And I would agree with that, talking about the United States. I would just say that we need a revolution, and that would probably end it full stop. That would end it full stop. We need to do away with everything that we know because it took a turn. And the turn that it took has been to the detriment of the people. It has been to the detriment of truth. It has been to the detriment of justice. It has been to the detriment of peace. We haven't had peace since I was an adult. And now I'm entering my senior years, and we still don't have peace. And in large measure, it's because of the belligerent policies of the United States of America. So we need to build new institutions, and they can exist alongside the current ones, but eventually we've got to get rid of the current institutions that no longer work for the people and no longer represent what they are supposed to be.
Well, when we look at the situation, I mean, Cynthia, both of us are American and neither one of us are living in the United States because of various reasons now. But when we look at the situation, the increase of censorship and pressure as far as the taking away of being able to have freedom of speech, I mean, what's happening? Where are we going with this?
Unfortunately, and there are so many more who are laboring inside the United States in jobs that they don't like, jobs that don't respect them, jobs just in order to make ends meet. And they, you know, for example, you have, I guess I shouldn't name, but I have followed many of the professors who are inside the United States and they've been punished because of their belief system. And one of them is a Palestinian American who had a job offered to him, and then the job was snatched away from him when he put something on Twitter, and it's a shame. We have another professor who wrote a very internationally acclaimed book. That book was about the Holocaust, and he told me, Cynthia, I haven't worked since then. And that's probably been about 10 years ago, 10 or maybe 15 years ago now. So people are being punished. People are suffering in their own ways because the diminution of rights and the Bill of Rights is not a document that is living and breathing in the United States any longer.
Where do you see all this going? I mean, what has to happen in your perspective?
Well, and people outside sort of look at you askance when you say, well, you know, I'm much more comfortable outside of the U.S. than I am inside the U.S. And people don't like outside because the United States is something, it's a dream. It's something to be aspired to live inside the United States. Every child's goal in life in certain countries is to be able to get a job in the United States, to be culled by the great culling machine and then leave one's country in the brain drain and go and help make private organizations like Google and Facebook more wealthy than they already are. The world has been turned upside down. Our values have been turned upside down, and the system is rigged, and it's rigged internationally as well. That's not just a inside the United States kind of thing. It's been rigged for hundreds of years. How do we unrig ourselves? I was at an anti-war protest, and I ended my speech by saying, "We shall take our country back." And then I thought about it for a while, and I said, I've been participating in anti-war speeches for 20 years, and we still haven't taken our country back, and we haven't ended the wars. After that last anti-war speech with the anti-war crowd that I was with, those are my people, and I thought about it, and I said, you know, I've been protesting for 20 years. I've been saying we're going to take for 20 years, and it hasn't happened yet. So what's the missing ingredient? When Trump said that the system is rigged, it was right. It was accurate. It was an accurate statement of that people in the U.S. find with their governance system now. What was left out of that analysis, though, was what has happened to the people since. I believe that for hundreds of years, as the system was being rigged, the people of the United States adjusted to the rigging of the system, and so they adjusted themselves. They themselves became rigged along with the rigged system. The only way we can actually have values that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about is that we've got to unrig ourselves. We've got to dig deeply within ourselves and understand who we are, where we are, what our country has lost, and how we can get it back. Finally, the other thing is that not only in this sort of rigging and unrigging, the United States has never dealt with some issues like the race issue. And race is easily used. It's the kindling that is always there, that all one has to do is throw a match that has been, but it still has a little spark. And that spark is enough to just combust the entirety of the United States. That is something that has to stop. And if it doesn't stop, we will never unrig ourselves, and we will never have the revolution of values that we need, and we will never take our country back.
Well, Dr. Cynthia McKinney, thank you so much for being with me. It has been a pleasure speaking to you here, Hidden Files. the way the alternative media led this fight for my freedom and the way that on social media, hashtag Free Marzia Hashemi went viral were very effective campaigns and say a lot about the potential for alternative voices to play a bigger role in highlighting what is really taking place on the ground globally. Well, let's take a look at some of the actions held around the world during the Free Marzia Hashemi campaign.
Free, free Marzia!
Free, free Marzia!
Free Marzia Hashemi!
Free Marzia Hashemi!
Free, free Marzia!
Free, free Marzia!
Marzia Hashemi should be free!
Marzia Hashemi should be free!
She's African American. She's a woman. She's a Muslim. She has a conscience. She is intelligent. She is a journalist, and she is exposing America's dirty laundry.
Whether it's Trayvon Martin, whether it's Eric Garner, whether it's the people being starved to death in Yemen, or people being bombed in Pakistan, or people being killed in Gaza, or people being killed in Libya, Marcier's concern for humanity is that we live in peace.
Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's moral. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's just.
Free, free Hashemi!
Free, free Hashemi!
Free, free Hashemi!
Free, free Hashemi!
Up in arms on the streets of Tehran, anger today over the detention of a prominent journalist. Marzia Hashemi is an anchor for Iran's English language state broadcaster, Press TV, and she's American.
It's a mixed bag.
Christened Melanie Franklin, born in New Orleans to Protestant parents. And inspired by the 1979 Islamic Revolution, Hashemi converted to Islam and changed her name. Her colleagues are demanding her return. Hashemi's boss says she's been mistreated while in custody and has done no wrong.
This is not an acceptable reason to make Marzia as a political pawn in a political play, in a political war with Iran.
What my experience has shown me is that we can and must try to magnify the voice of the voiceless, and we can be effective. We have to dig into files that others don't want to touch, cases that have been ignored because it just wasn't in their interest to portray. And this program is a start. Here, together, we can inspect, inform, and ignite the change that needs to take place so that more stories can have a happy ending like mine, so that people like you and me can have a chance at living a life as a person and not be reduced to yet another statistic, another number. God willing, we will be back with another episode of Hidden Files next week with another story from another corner of this vast world of ours that has so much more going on than the titles from the mainstream media. Stay curious.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zayed Al Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. So far, we understand that Islam has a lot to say about rights of animals, about how we deal with animals, how we benefit from animals, how we treat animals, and how bad and evil it is for us to mistreat animals as well. And although you might be doing that privately, although you might be doing it far away from other people seeing you or judging you, there will come a time where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will make you hold you accountable for what it is that you have done to an innocent animal, and the punishment will be severe. It's very clear when that expression used by Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi by Ahlul Bayt, ittaqullah fil baha'im, that itself is more than enough for us to use as a slogan as far as our treatment of animals, and always remembering that we need to have a highest level of compassion towards al-haywanat. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created everything for a reason. I don't need to go into that. That's something theological. When you are studying theology, study about why God created these things and those things. You might think certain animals have absolutely no benefit in the whole system of creation and things like that, but that's far from the truth, because we know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the all-wise, the all-knowing, created everything and anything for a reason. Yes, we understand that us as human beings, if we don't have some kind of regulation in how we are dealing with animals, how we are treating animals, we will wrong, we will do dhulm to a creation, we will do dhulm to the earth, we will do dhulm and wrong the animal kingdom. And we certainly have in many, many cases because of our greed. You know, a whale is hunted down because of a little piece that we want to extract from it. Lion is hunted down because of for a trophy. Shark, as we've mentioned on many occasions, is hunted down because of this. All of it comes down to greed, tamah, that the human being has, uncontrollable in most cases. Very, very unfortunate. And we understand that if we were to be observant of the Islamic foundations, the Islamic precepts when it comes to this topic, we wouldn't have a problem of extinction or things becoming endangered. And that's why حقوق الحيوان, rights of animals, is a very, very important topic for us to look into.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book مفاتيح الحيات, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafati, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Let me read this hadith very, very quickly. And I did mention before about dogs, about how Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, although a dog is najis, but how Ahlul Bayt cared for dogs. لما سار رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله when Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وآله when he was walking along with his army نظر إلى كلبة he saw a female dog تهر عن أولادها that was trying to protect its babies the dog was trying to protect the puppies were trying to have drink the milk of its mother and the dog was scared the dog was frightened the dog was trying to protect the puppies and the puppies were drinking or milk being milked by their mother فَأَمَرَ جُمَيْلَ إِبْنَ صُرَافَهُ Then he commanded Jumail ibn Sarafa أَن يَقُومَ حِذَاءَهَا to protect the puppies, to stand there to protect the puppies. And Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa asked Jumail to stand there to guard the mother dog and the puppies as well, and so that none of the people in the army who were going past the dog to in any way harm or annoy the mother dog and its puppies who were feeding from the mother dog. This is one of many ahadith that we are able to read. You remember when I said that you deal with the animal before you deal with yourself? Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, وَابْدَأْ بِعَلْفِهَا قَبْلَ نَفْسِكَ Make sure that you feed the animal a hay before your own self, before you feed your own self. Make sure that you quench the thirst before you quench your own thirst. There's a series of ahadith that speak about the punishment, the kafar, the punishment of a person who keeps an animal thirsty. Inna imra'atan, Imam Sadiq salamullahi alayhi, inna imra'atan uzibat fi hirratin rabatatha hatta matat atasha. A woman was punished because of a cat that she had tied and the cat died out of due to thirst. Hatta matat atasha. The cat died due to thirst because the woman had tied her up and that woman is punished because of that. Many of these ahadith that speak about the huquq, that speak about giving the animal rest, that speak about allowing the animal to be comfortable and all of these other things, many of these huquq, giving the animal the rights to mate when they need to. Imam Sadiq salamullahi alayhi, he also says, إِنَّهُ كَرِهَ إِخْصَاءُ الدَّوَابِ وَالْتَحْرِيشِ بَيْنَهَا Imam Sadiq says it's reprehensible to de-sex an animal and also to allow the animals to fight among them. It's also haram to slap an animal on its face. Make sure a person is wary of the hurma, the sanctity of the face of an animal, to avoid the hitting of an animal in that particular place. To give animal comfort with other animals as well. You're not to isolate an animal and keep it all on its own. To allow it to be with other animals also. Important thing here is for us to read the huquq, even from Imam Sajjad salamullahi alayhi in Risalatul Huquq, where he speaks about the rights of animals. Sorry, I had to quickly go through these, and there's a lot of things, a lot of interesting ahadith from Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam that speak about the rights of animals, but that on its own is a very, very vast and long topic. Also giving us just a little bit of an image of what Islam has to say about the rights of animals and how we need to treat them and how bad it is for us to mistreat animals. Inshallah, in the next episode, we will start on part number 5 and how we deal with nature. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children's cries.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents
a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.